Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the live music of We Banjo 3, a terrific band from Galway. They play traditional Irish bluegrass music that they call Celt Grass. The band is consisting of two sets of brothers, and we'll meet them, and they'll be playing live music for us during the course of this celebration of Irish culture, because the 36th Irish Fest is going to be underway at 5 o'clock this afternoon on the Henry Meyer Festival grounds on Milwaukee's lakefront. This hour, a rundown of all that you're going to find, all kinds of days of wonderful Celtic music, culture, dancing, dogs. We have a dog in our studio for the first time this year from Irish Fest. There will be more than 100 musical acts, including 11 new acts. We Banjo 3, one of the favorite acts that performs at Irish Fest. We're going to be talking this hour of the program with several people. We're going to have the president of Irish Fest give us a rundown of all this taking place. Linda Clark Klibowitz will be with us. And thank you very much, Linda, for joining us. Hello.
Hey, thank you very much, Kathleen. Glad to be here.
Yeah, we got a festival going already. Thank you, gentlemen. Very, very nice. You guys are good. We'll hear about the music that they play and the philosophy behind their music a little later on. Linda will give us a rundown of all that's taking place, answer any questions you have. We also have, KP did this particularly for me, and I thank him ever more for it. We have an Irish wolfhound in our studio. Hubig is his name. He's 3 years old. He's very large. He's very gentle. And his handler, Dave Berzins, is also here. Hubig is a champion dog for agility, for obedience. He's won many titles. Hubig, hello. I guess he doesn't talk, does he?
He does, but he won't today. He's a little quiet today, but he says hello.
Okay. He sure does, and thank you so much for bringing him in.
You're welcome.
It's 36 years, Linda. I remember the first one that took place on the festival grounds so long ago. It's been getting bigger and attracting more people, and the largest Irish celebration of music in the world now? Is it really?
It is. And I remember that first year, too. But we have 100 acts on 17 stages, and that makes us the largest in the world.
Mm-hmm. And are there certain things that are special this year? Usually we highlight people from a certain part of Ireland or from Scotland or from Newfoundland, many places.
Yeah, this year it's the Celtic World Showcase, and so we have six of the Celtic nations are represented. We have some bands from Isle of Man, from Scotland, and all the way from the Orkney Isles.
The what? I don't even know where they are.
Orkney. They're off of Scotland.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that'd be a nice place to go. It's also the 100th anniversary of the 1916 Easter Uprising. I would imagine that the cultural tent is going to pay attention to that event.
Yes, they have a lot of different exhibits, including postcards from the 1916, which is part of our ward archives at our center. And then there are some quilts and also some speakers that are going to be here. Eamon O'Queef is here. He is the grandson of Eamon de la Vera, and he will be speaking about his grandfather and his role in that uprising.
Hmm. And you even have, now the Irish have not been known, and maybe they've been given a bum rap for this, for their food, but you are celebrating Irish cuisine.
We are. We have an internationally renowned chef, Kevin Dundon, is here. He is fantastic, and he'll be doing shows down in the weekend in our new Celtic kitchen that is newly designed this year. So it's really expanded.
So what's he cooking?
I'm not exactly sure, Kathleen, but I think everybody should come down and check it out.
It'll be good, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
And then you have all these special things going on, too. There are always dancing lessons taking place and various contests.
Yes, we have our freckle contest and our red hair contest. There is a baking contest with yeast breads and muffins and scones, so you can enter those. And then you can learn Ceilidh dancing in the crossroads, as well as we have a dance tent, which has a lot of instructors teachers there that can help people learn how to dance Irish dance.
Yeah, we'll talk to you more during the course of the hour. And if people have questions about tickets or when certain things are happening, where you get schedules, there are special admission things going on, too, over the course of Irish Fest, you feel free to call us. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Those of you who listen to this show regularly know that we really love dogs. KP loves dogs. Scotty loves dogs. I love dogs. And we take every chance we can get to get a dog in the studio. But never have we had an Irish Wolfhound in our studio. And Hugh Big has joined us. It's always the first place I go when I go to Irish Fest to see the Terriers and the Wheaton Terriers, Irish Terriers, the Setters, and, of course, the Irish Wolfhound. And you have a champion. This dog is huge, Dave.
Yeah, yes, he is. He's, if you measure where his back is or where his shoulders are, he's about 34 to 35 inches tall.
And you don't just have one. You have three, and one is pregnant, I understand.
We hope one is pregnant. Yeah, we have three total.
You have three Irish Wolfhounds.
Yes.
Remarkable. They're very gentle dogs. People, I think, look at large dogs and they think, oh, that dog is too big. But they love to run, but they're very, very easygoing.
Yes, they have a remarkable ability to kind of tone down their level of intensity and can be very, very gentle.
Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to get an Irish Wolfhound?
It goes back about 20 years ago. My wife, Risha, who's here, had a friend who rescued them in the Dallas area, and we went to go see her for vacation one summer, and that started it all.
That was it, huh?
Yes.
And so your dog will be on the grounds, because there are all kinds of dogs doing agility contests, and you can get to know the owners, and lots of dogs over the weekend.
Yes, we specifically will be there earlier on Friday and then Sunday, but all 3 days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, there will be other Irish breeds, other wolfhounds, and so it's a fun time for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Is it a popular breed in Ireland, the wolfhound?
I don't think it's very widespread there. There are wolfhound breeders and exhibitors there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like in the States, there isn't maybe a widespread because, you know, there are challenges in having a wolfhound.
Yeah, well, they're big. I mean, they're really big.
that's the main challenge, yes.
I would imagine.
Yes.
He fits in the car okay, or you have to have a big car, too?
We have a minivan without the middle seats, and so
for
that
the dogs,
that can fit three relatively comfortable.
Yeah,
comfortably.
And why were they bred in Ireland? Have they been? And how long have they been around?
They've been around for a long time. In the 1800s, they kind of died out as the wolf population kind of died out, but then they were revived as a breed. So they've been around for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And they were bred originally to hunt wolves. And so they had to be fast enough to catch a wolf, but also big enough to kill the wolf. And so they combined speed and power at the same time.
Mm-hmm. So they really can go fast.
Yes. Hubig actually ran at the Greyhound Gala, I believe, Greyhound Gala, which is a local event for greyhounds, and he was clocked at 29 miles per hour.
No kidding.
Which he could probably go faster, or other wolfhounds can probably go faster as well.
And when you say he's a champion, how is he a champion?
He is a confirmation championship, which is, in the more simple terms, that's the beauty pageant for dogs, and so he has a championship in that area.
Oh, Hugh Big, you're a good-looking guy, huh? Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. And there are other dogs on the grounds, too, Linda.
Yes, there are. We have 9 different kinds that are down on the grounds, and you can see them from the smallest to the biggest, like Hubie here.
Yeah. Great. Our number is 800-486-8655. We'll weave some phone calls into our conversation during the hour. Dennis is calling from Antelo. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. You had mentioned the Irish cuisine. If I was going to Irish Fest and could only have one dish, what would you recommend? And by my calculations, if you were at the first Irish Fest, Kathleen, you are 39.
Yeah, right. I sure am. I've been 39 for a long, long time. But I do remember that first one. What would you eat?
Oh, that's such a hard choice because I'm down there and try and sample everything. But we do have some new foods this year. There's a new boxty that you can try that you might want to try that if you haven't had that before.
Okay, and there's a lot of food down on the ground, so you may want to try something. Now, this chef who's coming in, who's so well-known, will be cooking things that people can eat, or is it demonstration cooking?
He will be. Yes, absolutely. They have tables right in front of the stage.
Yeah. Tell us about the origins of Irish Fest, Linda. When did it start? Why did it start?
Well, it started with our founder, Ed Ward, and a group of people. They just felt that they could put on an Irish festival like Festa Italiana, and if they can do it, then we can do it as well. And so we got a group together and put on the first one in 1981, and it's been going strong and growing ever since.
Mm-hmm. And you're attracting people. I know there are people from all over who come, and many, many people from Ireland are here, musicians.
And from other countries as well. I have the honor of running the info and raffle booth, so we get a chance to talk to a lot of people, find out where they're from, get their reactions and recommendations. And so usually we have representation from all 50 states as well.
Yeah. A lot of people from Illinois I know are here, and it's a lot of people from the state of Wisconsin.
State of Wisconsin and all our border states, we do gather a lot of people from there as well.
Yeah. So are there a lot of Irish wolfhounds in Milwaukee, in Wisconsin? Do you know?
There are a good number. If I were to estimate, maybe in the metro area, Milwaukee area, there would be maybe in the 20 to 30 range.
Mm-hmm.
And then Wisconsin, obviously, proportionally more.
Yeah. So they'll all have a little reunion over the weekend.
Yes, some will know each other. His Hubig's sister, who lives with a couple in Caledonia, will be there. And then other wolfhounds and their siblings will also be there.
Yeah, well, that'll be great. And they're Irish Terriers and Wheaton Terriers, Irish Setters, beautiful Setters.
Kerry Blue Terriers. Red and White Setters, I believe.
Ooh, they're gorgeous, aren't they?
Yes, and Glen of Amal, I believe.
Nice. It's a really nice part of Irish Fest.
Yes, it is.
It's wonderful. All right, we'll let you go for a run. Oh, no, I guess for a cheeseburger.
Yes.
Cubic is getting a cheeseburger.
Yes, he is.
Aww.
He's being a good boy, so he gets
a
cheeseburger.
He's a very good boy. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for being with us. We're going to continue. We're having a celebration of our own, of Irish culture and music. The band we're listening to, and we'll hear from the members of the band a little bit later, they are from Galway. They play traditional Irish music, bluegrass music. They call it Celtgrass, and they'll be giving us music during the hour. Of Wee Banjo 3. They are one of the bands featured, one of the favorite bands at Irish Fest, and wonderful musicians. Their debut album, The Banjo Tree, Roots of the Banjo Tree, was released in 2012 and named Traditional Music Album of the Year by the Irish Times. Their latest album is String Theory, ranked number one on the Billboard World Chart when it was released. We'll meet, it's a band of two sets of brothers, and we'll meet three of the members as we carry on here. We're celebrating Irish Fest, opening this afternoon on the grounds, Summerfest grounds here on Milwaukee's lakefront, and it's a terrific festival, and we're talking about Irish music and culture. Linda is staying with us. She's president of Milwaukee Irish Fest and can answer any questions you have about special days, special deals you can get, and any questions you have about the acts. Linda Clark Klibowitz is president of Irish Fest. And joining us in our studio now, all the way from Ireland, is Minister Sean Kine. He has all kinds of responsibilities. He is the Minister of State for Gaeltacht Affairs and Natural Resources for Ireland, so he's responsible for a number of things, including promoting the Irish language in Irish-speaking areas of the country, the Irish language being taught in schools. He has also been involved in lots of educational issues, in energy issues, renewable energy sources, how we can work to protect and promote the linguistic heritage as a living language. He lives in Clyda, which is just outside his home village of Moycullen, and he worked as agricultural environmental consultant for a number of years. Sean, thank you very much for joining us. Hi.
Thanks, Kathleen. Thank you very much for having me.
You have a lot of responsibilities in your job, don't you?
Well, it's more than it sounds, really. It's an important job, and it's one I've had since mid-May of this year. I've been a Member of Parliament since 2011, but I got this job as Minister of State in May of this year, so it's been fairly hectic, but obviously an important role in terms of the responsibilities in relation, particularly to the Irish language, as Minister for the Gaeltacht. It is our national language, but it is a language under threat. And part of the festival here is to promote it as well internationally, and we do a lot of work in our department towards that as well.
Why is it under threat?
Well, it's been under pressure for a long number of years, and I'll be giving a speech at one of the hedge schools as part of the festival Saturday. And there's a lot of reasons. It goes back to the time, I suppose, it goes back to the time of the famine. A lot of native Irish speakers would have died out at that time, or would have immigrated. A lot of people who have immigrated felt that they needed English. And, you know, the message would have come home to other people in Ireland that really you need to have English if you're to survive, whether it be in the States or whether it be in UK or Australia. So, I mean, that was part of the reason. And after that, because of the influence of, obviously, the British state, we gained independence in 1922, but it was at such a low level at that stage that there's been a lot of work done since that, I have to say, and in terms of promoting it. But it is still under pressure. But particularly in the, as you said, the Gaeltacht areas, which are the native Irish-speaking areas, mainly along the west coast in counties Galway and Kerry, part of Cork, Donegal, Waterford and County Meath. So those are the sort of the official Gaeltacht areas, which is only a small part of the country. And outside of that, then, work is ongoing in trying to promote the language as well in our schools and our education system and in other areas where Irish speakers come together and try to put on classes to bring people who might have had some Irish from their education years and try to bring them back and learn more and become fluent.
Did you grow up speaking English and Gaelic or just Gaelic?
Mainly English. My parents wouldn't have had much Irish, like a lot of kids in the education system in Ireland. We learnt Irish at school and went on from that to, you know, I suppose not use it, if you like, till a number of years before I got involved in politics. So it's a story that's replicated, I think, across the country. You have people that would learn Irish in school, and then once you leave school, you know, maybe it's not spoken as much after that, depending on what role you have or what job you have or what career path you take. But there's still a lot of interest, and the vast majority of people in Ireland would like to see the language flourish and survive. And if I've heard it once, I've heard it a thousand times, people saying, God, I wish I was more fluent in Irish, or I had better Irish.
Mm-hmm. And the reason for preserving it is what? Why is that important for a country?
Well, it's our national language. It's part of our culture, part of who we are. And going back to generations, you know, we've had people whether it be writing poetry, writing songs in Irish. So it's important. It's part of who we are, and any nation I think should encourage and support their national language and their culture. And you know, I said this is the language, or the language is part of our culture, and the Milwaukee Irish Fest promotes culture, and I said language is part of that.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk a little bit more about the cultural area in Irish Fest, because it's fascinating. The theatre that's done, the people, you can learn a little bit of Gaelic. You have at previous Irish Fest that you can speak the language, and those who do speak Gaelic will find people they can talk to on the Irish Fest grounds. The cultural area is an important part of this festival.
Very much so. We always call it the jewel of our festival. Mm-hmm. We have the harp tent. You have genealogy, where you can learn more about your heritage. There is the theater tent that you mentioned, the cultural village. There's a theater in there as well, the Volta Theater, and you can see some movies. You've got the literary corner, where you can learn more. And there is a Gael Talk tent as well, and an Irish language workshop that you can attend, that you can go into it also.
Mm-hmm. That part of Ireland, too, the part where you're from, Galway, really does seem to be rich in culture as well. A lot of theater going on, a lot of music festivals that are happening there, and then a celebration of the language. It seems to be particularly rich in all of that.
Yeah, I mean, Galway's a great place. It's the second largest county in Ireland. We have Galway City, as I said, which is a young people's town, if you like. They call it the graveyard of ambition, because once you come there, you don't want to leave, so people move there for a variety of reasons, and they like to stay. But there's a number of festivals through the year. The Arts Festival, which is internationally renowned. Film Fly, or the Film Festival as well. We have the Galway Races, which is a racing festival, which is, again, horse racing is very important to the Irish culture. Even today, actually, in Clifton and Connemara is the Connemara Pony Show. It's the the biggest and largest show event within the Connemara Ponies, which is our native breed. And there's sister societies here in the US and across Europe and Australia and different places. So there's a lot goes on in Galway. We successfully held the two stopovers to the Volvo Ocean Race number of years ago, which really showcased the city in a very, very positive light. So there's a lot goes on. We have Druid, which is internationally renowned. Gary Hines and Druid tours America on a number of occasions. So there's a lot like that goes on. But you know, you can go down Shop Street in Galway, you'll see people busking, you'll see bands playing in a number of pubs. Music like Wee Banjo 3, and certainly there's a lot goes on in the city.
Yeah. Now, you have other responsibilities as minister. You're also involved in environmental work, and also involved in job creation, I understand. I'm just interested in a general overview of how the Irish economy has been doing. It was booming for so many years. Is it still booming, or is it slowed down a bit? And what do you do as minister to keep people in jobs and to create jobs? And where do they need to be created in Ireland?
Well, like a lot of countries, we suffer badly in the height of the crash, we'll say the international crash in 2008-2009. So we went into deep recession, of which we're just about coming out of, but it's been a tough 6 or 7 years. We have seen an increase in job creation in the last 5 years. A lot of it, for example, in the hospitality sector and tourism sector, we really tried to push the whole tourism side of things in 2011 when we came into government. We reduced taxes on hotels and businesses involved in food, for example, to try and make them more competitive. And we reduced the travel tax to try and encourage more airlines to come into Ireland. We promoted initiatives such as the Wide Atlantic Way, which is the longest continuous drive from North Donegal down to Cork, which goes to our own native Galway and Connemara and through Galway City and Salt Hill. And it's just a wonderful driving experience, mm-hmm. beautiful scenery, and it's something that has encouraged and promoted tourism over the last number of years. And we're investing in various points off this roadway to try and promote tourism and to try and promote the experience in the area. We have a lot of even US multinationals that have located in Ireland. Apple have received planning permission for a major data centre just outside Galway City near Athenry. Planning permission was received there only last week, and that's a huge investment. And we've seen so many companies move in terms of pharmaceuticals or IT and computing in the area as well. So it's a very vibrant place. It suffered, but I think it's regaining ground. We have a wonderful university there, National University of Ireland, Galway. A lot of people, obviously in university, about 17,000 students in that university, and Galway Mayo Institute of Technology as well. So it is a busy and thriving place.
Do you worry about what the Brexit vote will do to Ireland?
Yes, you know, I think we actively campaigned, you know, for Irish citizens in the UK and those UK citizens who lived in Ireland, who are living in Ireland, who had a vote. We actively campaigned to try and encourage them to vote to stay in the European Union. Obviously, they made a sovereign decision collectively in the UK to leave. We regret that, but, you know, perhaps there are opportunities as well for Ireland. But we felt that we're better off as part of the European Union. They're our largest trading partner. They trade €1 billion a week between our two countries. So there are concerns about what impact that might have. But again, we have to look at the opportunities or possible opportunities, whether some companies may choose to relocate from London to Dublin. You know, we have to be ready if they do that. Mm-hmm. We don't want to obviously fall out anyone, but we have to take opportunities as they are, as they present themselves. And if there are opportunities in that line, certainly we'll be there to grasp them.
So, what are the complications when it comes to, you talked about the Irish who are working in England, the England workers who are working in Ireland, and then those who are working in Northern Ireland as well? Does it create a situation where there has to be a border again with the North, and those people who are from other countries who are working in Ireland, do they have to worry about their jobs, and do Irish workers have to worry about their jobs in England?
Well, since we gained independence in 1922, we have had a common travel area with the UK, so we've been able to go back and forth without passport controls. Now, there was a border control in the UK, or without visa controls, I should say. There was a border in between Northern Ireland and the Republic, and thankfully, as part of the peace process and as a dividend of the peace process, those border posts were removed. And there certainly was, and I think still is, some concern that they might be brought back once Britain finalised the Brexit, the leaving of the European Union, because the Republic, who will be staying in the European Union, will share a land border on the island of Ireland with a country who would be outside of the European Union. So there is a concern there, but I think that the Prime Minister in Britain, Theresa May, and the Taoiseach Enda Kenny have met recently and have at this early stage stated that there will be no return to border posts, which I think had a very negative impact, if you like, not just on the economy but on the whole heightening of tensions between North and South and within Northern Ireland as well. So certainly nobody wants to see the return of those border posts.
Yeah. Your first time in Milwaukee?
First time in Milwaukee, only the second time in the United States.
Really?
Yes. I have a lot of family in Boston. I have about 10 aunts and uncles in Boston. And
10?
10, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
There was 15 in my mother's family and 7 in my father's family. And so I have another aunt in New York and one in Los Angeles. So a lot of American connections, but none in Milwaukee. But it's a beautiful place. I've only arrived literally, 2 hours ago now at this stage.
Oh, my gosh, you just got here.
Just got here.
You must be exhausted. You're on the radio.
We spent 3 days in Chicago, so
I'm
sort of well-rested. So just came down
So you'll be in the cultural area if people want to meet you, and you'll be talking about the Irish language?
Yeah, there's the speech in part of the Hedge School on Changabio, it's called. It's the living language. And after that, I'm back and forth between different events. I was at the visit part of the summer school in, what's the name of the place, Linda?
That's the Milwaukee Irish Fest Summer School.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
I can't pronounce the name of the suburb or town.
Wauwatosa.
Wauwatosa. Yeah.
How would you have said it, I wonder?
Wauwatosa. I know. If I'd have written down, I'd have figured it out. Beautiful place and beautiful old buildings where the centre is there. And
It's a great centre.
I think next door we went to
Women's Club to St. Matthew's. We have 3 different locations for our summer school this year.
Yeah, great. So beautiful, nice. Beautiful old buildings there.
Yeah. Well, welcome to Milwaukee, and thank you for the
Thanks a million, and
insights.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks a million. I like that. That's an Irish phrase. Thanks a million. Thanks a million. We're going to continue. We're celebrating Irish Fest because it opens this afternoon on the Henry Meyer Festival grounds right on the lakefront. It's a beautiful setting here in Milwaukee, and it runs through Sunday. If you have never been, I don't know where you've been because it's going on for 36 years. But if you've never been, this would be a good year to go. It never fails to delight everybody who goes, and same is true of Ireland. I think everybody I know who's been to Ireland can't rave enough about how hospitable the people are in that country. I think it's very true. So we are speaking, and we did want to tell you, what did I want to tell you? Something about the dogs. Oh, the dog is on Facebook. We wanted to, yeah. So that's the Kathleen Dunn Show on Facebook, and KP's also doing a picture of everybody who's in our studio, so that's proven to be kind of a hit. We just learned how to do this in the last 2 days. It's like we just got a cell phone, and so we're taking pictures so people can see what's going on. So we're going to continue. We're going to meet members of We Banjo 3 because they all have interesting histories, and they've won many championships on different instruments in Ireland, so we're going to hear more music from them. We want to thank Sean Kine for being with us, Minister of State for Gaeltacht Affairs and Natural Resources. He represents Galway West. And Linda will stay with us. If you have any questions about Irish Fest, here's how you join us. 800-486-8655 is the number. Facebook is the Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about Irish Fest this hour of the program, opening today on the Summerfest grounds here in Milwaukee. Of course, music is a huge part of this festival. As Linda was saying, there are terrific bands coming in, all kinds of stages. And one of the fun things about the festival is you can go to these little side stages and you'll find somebody playing who just can't be beat. And you go, oh, I just discovered this. People are playing music everywhere. We Banjo 3 is one of the more popular bands and very well-accomplished musicians. They are from Galway. They play, you heard them during the course of this show, traditional Irish old-time bluegrass music, and it consists of two sets of brothers. They have several albums. The debut album, I want to repeat this, was named the Traditional Music Album of the Year by the Irish Times, ranked number one, their latest, their sixth album, I think, String Theory, good name for an album, number one on the Billboard World Chart when it was released. It consists of two sets of brothers, and we'll meet three of the brothers. Well, they're not all three brothers. Two brothers and one whose brother is not with us are with us in our studio and have been playing all hour for you. David Howley is, well, let's start with Martin because he's the older brother. Martin Howley is seven-time All-Ireland banjo champion, first Irish banjo player to play at the Grand Old Opry, but you've been playing other musical instruments while you've been playing for us, too, so you're a guy of many talents, too, right?
Yeah, thank you. It's lovely to be here. We're very excited.
Yeah, very nice to have you here. And what are you playing now?
This is a mandolin, so the banjo is kind of the centerpiece of the group, but in an unlikely turn of events, I broke a string on the banjo and wasn't able to replace it just before the studio, so you've been treated to mandolin only today. Some people would say that's a good thing, so, you know.
It's like Diet Wee Banjo 3.
Diet Wee Banjo 3. Oh, you guys have a sense of humor, too. Do you joke when you're on stage?
I think you have to have a sense of humor to be in the same van for 6,000 miles around America.
No, I'll bet you do. You have to really get along with each other. And your brothers, to boot. David Howley is Martin's younger brother. You're also a singer, and you play many instruments as well.
Yeah, I'm the youngest in the band, but I have the most sense.
Really?
No. Yeah, I sing.
You learned all your good sins from your older brother.
I did, yeah, thankfully. And brothers are brothers. They'll keep you in line.
Yeah, I bet they will. Yeah. So you play, what do you play?
I play guitar in the band. I actually was the third banjo player at one time, and that'll tell you how good I was, because they don't let me bring a banjo on the road anymore. So We Banjo 3 is the four-piece band with two banjo players.
Yeah.
So I play the guitar and I sing with the band. And on a very rare occasion, I am known to play a little bit of mandolin, but yeah.
Nice, very nice. And Fergal Scahill is also here. He also plays many instruments, is considered one of the best fiddlers in Irish music. He's champion of the fiddle. He plays guitar. He plays mandolin. You guys just play all these instruments. I can't imagine being able to go effortlessly from one to another. How can you do that?
I suppose we grew up playing since I was I'm the youngest of four, and Enda is the fourth member of Wee Banjo 3. He's not here today. He's my older brother. So since I was very, very young, I've been playing instruments, and I always had a case of, ooh, I like that, I'll try that.
Uh-huh.
I'll try that. And we were lucky enough to grow up in a community where there was a lot of music, and there was also a scheme where you could rent and borrow instruments.
Oh.
So without having to make a huge financial jump into buying an instrument, we were able to, you know, for a very nominal fee, get an instrument to try. So that afforded us the chance to explore and discover what instruments that we liked. I turned out that I liked all of them. So as did David and Martin. Yeah. We just kind of, just loved it and always enjoyed.
So how did you meet each other? Did you grow up together, or you met along the road, the musical road somewhere?
An online dating site, actually. No, for musicians.
That's the way to go. Yeah. There probably should be something like that, is there?
There probably is. You know, every time you think of something like that, it's already been thought of, usually out in San Francisco, and they've met a million out of
it. Meetup.com.
Yeah. No, we grew up in Galway on the West Coast, just as the minister was just mentioning there. It's, you know, it's a real bubbling hub of artists and music and culture. And so we grew up south of Galway City, and then Fergal and Enda grew up slightly north of Galway City. But Galway and Ireland in general is steeped in traditional music, and there's a lovely process by which people get to know each other, playing in kind of communal gatherings called sessions. And they're just a very informal gathering of musicians that have a kind of a common language of a repertoire of tunes together. And most Irish musicians meet that way. And it was just serendipitous. You know, we admired Fergal and Enda's playing. They're a couple of years older, although they don't look it. And we admired their playing. And then, I suppose, over time, started to play music together in various different places and outfits. And, it naturally came together then as a band. It made sense, you know, really enjoy playing music together. So why not do it for a living?
Mm-hmm. You know? So your band is Wee Banjo 3, and we have three of you here, and we don't have a banjo.
This is the actual...
Can you believe it?
The actual only time that Wee Banjo 3 is numerically correct.
That's right.
But it doesn't have a banjo.
It doesn't have a banjo. Well, we'll have to go to Irish Fest to hear the banjo being played, I guess.
Yeah.
Of all of these instruments, which is most intimidating that you all play? Is it the banjo?
I don't know if it's... I suppose we kind of see Fergal as our musician fill-in for everything. Fergal plays every single instrument in the band.
Wow.
So he himself plays banjo. So all of us do actually play banjo in the band, but just at different times.
I may not have wound up in the band at all, only for Milwaukee Irish Fest, because the first time that the guys got invited to Milwaukee in 2012, I wasn't in the band. It was actually a three-piece band, and it was based around the banjo, Enda, Martin and David. And then Enda got onto Barry, I think it was, and they got the invite to come out in 2012, and then Enda started to panic that the three banjos on stage wouldn't quite pack the punch that's required at Irish Fest, you know, because we had previously been at the festival. So he rang me up and said, do you want to go to Milwaukee for the weekend?
For the weekend?
Yes. So we flew out on Thursday in 2012, and I think we had maybe one rehearsal beforehand where I learned some of the tunes and kind of got together, and we flew out on the Thursday, and then, or maybe on the Wednesday, and we did seven shows over the weekend.
Including the one out in Mauritosa as well.
Yeah.
Goodness.
Toss it tonight, yeah.
And we did a great weekend, including the thunderstorm in the small tent. And
Sunday night.
And after the festival success, then the guy said, do you want to join the band? And
I think so it was like a tryout for you too. Were you nervous?
I didn't realize it was a tryout. Maybe I should have been nervous.
No, you shouldn't have been, because it worked out fine, didn't it?
I think Fergal was a natural fit for the band. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's what's always been so easy about this band, is that we are brothers. We've played together all of our lives. Even Fergal fought me Baron for a time, about 14 years ago, and Martin and Enda would have been playing banjo together for years, and me and Fergal used to gig together. And so I think we had all these different links between each other. We just never, the four of us had never actually played together.
Mm-hmm.
There'd been I suppose, ideas of the band and in different ways.
Mm.
I think when Fergal joined the band, we all kind of, that first gig, the other three of us kind of looked at each other and went, Yep. We can't lose them now.
And what is it? Because you're highly acclaimed, this band. You've won all kinds of awards. You've been, people are saying all these laudatory things about your band and all of your musicianship. Did you have a vision of what you wanted to accomplish? And you can pat yourselves on the back with this question. What is it, do you think, that has so many critics saying how superb you are?
You know, I guess really what we set out to do was have some fun with music. And it originally started with the exploration of the banjo and how it's travelled. So the banjo had this journey from Africa into the Americas and with slavery. And so it was a music of oppression that largely begot the banjo. And then Ireland, as Sean was talking about earlier there, was under British rule for many years. So Irish music was oppressed. And there's an uncanny similarity between the two. When you see music of oppression, often is very, very joyful, you know. And a lot of people would say Irish music is very, very joyful and it's a lot of fun. And so our aim when we started the band was to trace those roots of the banjo and then to have fun. So every live performance is about bringing the audience in and having a conversation with them and them going away dancing, smiling and, you know, happy, fulfilled. That's mm-hmm. that's our aim, really.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess we're just ourselves, you know, and it's a really fun band. I think we enjoy ourselves just as much as the audience, and we get to just be ourselves and play the music we want to play. And I think the last couple of albums have been a real snapshot into the places we've been. I mean, as Martin said, that the first album was very much based on the journey of the banjo, and String Theory is very much the journey of us as musicians and friends and traveling around, as I said, in a van with boxes of CDs and banjos and Bowerons and everything in the back. It's been a great trip, yeah.
Yeah, I'll bet it has. And tell me more about the fiddle. That astounds me, because you can play that thing really badly. And a lot of people start when they're kids and they do. You know, so, no, seriously, it's hard to listen to. But to be, when you can play as you play on the fiddle and you've won awards for this, it's pretty remarkable. I don't know how somebody can play it that well. And that fast, you know, it's so fast.
It's the Irish music is the dance music, so it's fast. And you'll see at the festival over the weekend that there's lots of dance thumping.
Yes,
you want to get off your seat. You want to dance,
right?
And the fiddle is really, I think, is one of the core instruments. It has that lilt. It has a real flow to it, you know. And to get to this, I've just been playing all of my life, so I've been playing since I was 5 years of age. And again, coming from where we came, we were so lucky to come from Galway, where there was fantastic Irish musicians all around us that we got to play with and that we got to learn from and get gentle encouragement and also scolding, you know. When you stepped outside the lines, you were told, you know, in a constructive way.
Uh-huh.
And that's invaluable. You can't buy that, you know. So I guess we were just lucky. And I taught this week as well at the...
Oh, did you?
At the summer school.
Nice.
Yeah.
Great.
So I really enjoyed that. I was in St. Michael's, a wonderful space, actually, yeah. So I had a great class out there and we explored some of the intricacies of the instrument and the way I approach tunes. It was an improvisation and our invitation class, and it was really very enjoyable.
I bet that was fun.
Yeah.
You sing too. Would you mind doing a song now?
Yeah.
Where you sing?
Yeah, we'll sing. So there's the first track off that new album is a song called Home, and we'll sing that for you.
Right. So I should just say, Milwaukee's really special to us. This is our fifth year back to the festival. And it kind of coincides, you know, as Fergal said, the band, as it first became a four-piece, was Milwaukee. And we played in a tent to about 200 people. And by the end of the weekend, that was, you know, 1,500 people. And there's people that still come up to us and they say, I was at that gig in the rain.
Oh, nice.
And the rain came down so hard that people had to crowd into the tent. And it was just one of those magical things. So this year, the Saturday night, to try and, you know, celebrate that friendship we have with Milwaukee, we're doing a big, big Saturday night show. It's our fifth year birthday bash, I guess, and also to celebrate the Billboard World Number One, which is a big deal for a band from Ireland.
It is big.
So so Saturday night's going to be the big one, and it's just come out and bring your dancing shoes because it's going to be fun.
Great.
It's on at 6:30 as well.
All right, yeah. 6:30, Saturday.
1, 2, 3.
town. Nothing moves for miles, not a sign nor a sound. Far from the distant blue color of your eyes, foreign room below a foreign sky.
Wonderful, wonderful. You guys are good. And you can sing, too. Very, very nice.
Thank you.
Very nice. All right, so you're performing 6:30. Everybody should be there 6:30.
That's 6:30 on
Saturday night.
Saturday, and then 10 p.m. on Friday and 6:30 on Sunday.
And what's your schedule like? Are you on the road all the time? Are you traveling over Europe, the States as well?
We're on about a seven-week tour of America.
Wow.
At the moment. We started up in Ohio, and we're going all the way down through until we get to Kansas City. And we come home, and we have about 2 weeks off, and then we start touring in Europe as well.
Goodness. So you don't get much time in that home?
You know, we get a lot more than we used to. We kind of try and plan times to get home and to hang out with our parents and our friends and
good.
Our wives and girlfriends and reintroduce ourselves.
Good, that's a good thing.
It's been fun, and I think we really enjoy touring with each other, and it makes it really easy.
I can tell. Yeah, I can tell. You're wonderful. We Banjo 3, be sure and see them. Linda, we just want to let people know there's special admissions with certain items if you can donate.
Absolutely.
Over the weekend.
Absolutely. Tonight, $5 admission with... and then free admission if you bring school supplies, which we donate to the Hope House. Kids 12 and under are always free all weekend. Friday is our half price day, so it's $10 for adults all night long. And on Saturday, if you register for the walk, the run walk, you get in free. And we also this year have a Saturday, Sunday 2-day pass, $25.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And then Sunday, free admission with a donation of the non-perishable food items prior to 11 a.m. at our South Gate.
All right. Have a great festival. I'm sure you will.
Thank you.
We
so
Banjo
much.
3, will you take us out? We have about a minute. Just Absolutely. Play whatever you want. Yeah. And thank you so much. Thanks for being here and sharing all of your enormous talent. Thanks, Linda, for being with us. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this wonderful hour. We Banjo 3.